Hi, everybody. Welcome to F This Movie. Technically not F This Movie. This is like an F This Movie prequel. Oh. So pretend this F This Movie takes place before all of the other F This Movies.
So this will somehow be worse?
Oh, this is definitely going to be worse, please. I'm joined tonight by a huge Star Wars geek, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
You had some Star Wars shit going on in your wedding cake, right?
I did. I had Leia and Han Solo on top of the cake.
And you dressed at your wedding as Slave Leia, no?
Yes, I did. And my wife was an Ewok.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, it was which cute. The one that dies?
Yes.
Oh, poor Ewok. So, yeah, you're listening to F This Movie. This, by the way, is the first F This Movie recorded in the new F This Movie studio. Actually, technically, it's not. I did record the Scott Pilgrim podcast with Eric Asperschlager. In this studio also, but
less special.
We were technically in two different states. And by that I mean drunk and sober. And if you've listened to the show, you know which was which. So this is our first sort of live show, not live, because there's no such thing as a live podcast recorded in the studio. But anyway, F This Movie, blah, blah, blah. F This Movie, .blogspot.com. F This Movie Podcast at gmail.com, facebook.com/F This Movie, twitter.com/F This Movie?
I don't even know.
How does Twitter work? What happens on Twitter? I have no idea.
DVD Verdict.
You can listen to us, yeah, through DVDVerdictPresents.com or iTunes. You can find us in iTunes. Just search F This Movie. Or you could also search most kick-ass podcast, and I'm pretty sure we come up.
Can I get something out of the way?
Yes,
I feel
please.
Like every time you are kind enough to ask me to do one of these podcasts, I should apologize for the Saw podcast again. So
I don't understand.
Well, because I feel so terrible that we
told people.
Yes,
like Saw is not that bad, and maybe it's more interesting than you think. And then they come out with Saw the Final Chapter.
Yeah. So
which
really quickly,
just came out or is coming out. Is it out now? Did it come out on Tuesday?
I think it came out. If it didn't, okay. Yeah, I think so. So, just really quickly, I apologize once again.
Is that your plan to apologize every time?
I was thinking about it.
For the song. Yeah, no, I think it's a good...
It'll be fun for everybody.
I think it's a good bit to do. So, yeah, tonight, obviously, we're talking about Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, and there will be plenty to say about that. But before we even get to our usual, hey, have you seen anything good? And then Mike's all, I like Doctor Who. before we get into any of that, some big stuff has happened like in the last 24, 48 hours. And obviously the biggest is and I wasn't even aware of this, Alex, who's on the show all the time, sent me this fucking cryptic email that's like, Catwoman and Bane? Question mark. I have to think about this. And I wrote back, I don't get it because I was out doing things in the community. And I didn't know the announcement had been made, so then he sent me a link. And I'm like, oh, really? So, yeah, they announced today, Christopher Nolan announced the casting of Anne Hathaway, not as Catwoman, as Selina Kyle.
Yes.
Which might be telling. And also, Tom Hardy has been cast for a while. It was announced that he would be playing Bane. And Mike, in addition to being a big Star Wars nerd, you're also a huge Batman nerd. Your thoughts. I mean, you are the perfect guy to have this podcast tonight. Because I was going to bring somebody else on to apologize for the Saw podcast. It was going to be Tobin Bell, actually. He was going to apologize like this. It was going to be his little puppet by proxy. but anyway, they couldn't do it. So fuck them.
Sorry, everybody.
So your thoughts on this casting announcement.
Christopher Nolan has built up enough goodwill with me that I will just assume he knows what he's doing.
That's what I'm at too.
With, you know, when Heath Ledger was announced, I was like, what? I thought that was crazy casting for Joker.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant casting, it turns out. So it looks like he knows what he's doing. So
yeah,
I will hold.
Yeah. I don't know. Here's the problem. I don't know Bane from the comics. I mean, I know he's a character in the comics, but I never have read a single comic with Bane in it.
Okay.
I just today learned like he played this huge role in the comics because he broke Batman's back.
Right.
Big whoop. The guy's fine. Batman, I mean.
Yeah, but we were stuck with Azrael for a while.
I don't...
Okay, yeah, enough said. Azrael. Asriel.
Yeah. Instead of Batman?
Yeah, because Batman's back was broken.
Oh.
So this character, Asriel, took over.
As Batman?
Yeah.
Like as Batman or just like no Batman, just Asriel?
If I remember correctly, it's no Batman, just Asriel, but he took over the Batman books. So I think he, I assume he was chilling out in Gotham City, doing everything Batman does, but while Batman was laid up.
Wow. That must have been thrilling as a reader of Batman.
Yeah, very.
Cool, I gotta get this new issue to see Batman. Be like, can you give me some more high C? And then Asriel go out and fucking fight crime in Gotham City. What's Asriel gonna do next while Batman watches a Law & Order SVU marathon? Alright, so yeah, sorry. That's exactly the same place. So, for me, the only Bane is the fucking Bane of my existence, which is Batman and Robin. Where he's just like, I'm Bane! Like, right? I'm pretty sure.
That's pretty much it.
Him and Poison Ivy and fucking Mr. Freeze. The Ice Age! So that's Bane to me. I like Tom Hardy, but I don't know.
Me too.
And then, you know, I'm bored kind of by the idea that he's even going to do Catwoman, because again, it's like, do we have to do just all the same famous Batman villains?
Yes.
There are other ones to cover, you know?
But they're famous, I think, because they're, you know, for a reason. They're maybe the most interesting or...
Okay. Yeah, I mean, sure.
I think Catwoman is interesting.
I like Catwoman. It's just like it's been done and the Joker's been done. And obviously, the way he redid the Joker, it's like, well, you rewrote how this is done. And so, again, like you said, I trust him because not only was I like, what, with Heath Ledger? I was actually kind of upset about Heath Ledger.
Yes.
I apparently hadn't learned my lesson from Tobey Maguire and Spider-Man, which I was also against. I was against Heath Ledger. The difference is, while I was against Heath Ledger, mostly just because I thought he was too young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew that Heath Ledger was like a pretty kick-ass actor,
mm-hmm.
and I don't really know that about Anne Hathaway.
Okay, I'll give you that.
She tends to bother me in movies because she's very actressy,
okay.
If that makes sense. I love her in Rachel Getting Married, but in that movie, her actressiness benefited the part.
Okay.
It made sense for the character. In a lot of other movies, it bothers me. But she'll look hot in the Catwoman stuff,
yes,
right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
So again, like you said, I trust Christopher Nolan. The other sort of big thing, underwhelming thing, was the reveal of the cast of X-Men First Class.
I didn't see that.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Okay. It's underwhelming.
Okay.
I expect it to be like, wow, ooh, I'm so excited. It looks a lot like the Bryan Singer stuff. What I took away is like, January Jones will probably be hot.
Yeah.
As Emma Frost. Because almost anybody would be,
yes.
Because the costume does all the work. Because January Jones, let's face it, she's beautiful, but rather sexless.
Uh-huh.
If you watch Mad Men, you would much rather be with several other people. Christina Hendricks obviously is the gimme, but even the other one, Fred Armisen's ex, Peggy, whose name is not coming to me. Right now, oh my god, Elizabeth Moss, Jesus, help me out, man.
I'm too busy watching Doctor Who.
That's right, you don't
remember?
Watch Mad Men.
No.
You're all like, is it? I fucking can't come up with the girl from Doctor Who right now. So.
Billy Piper.
God,
how dare you.
Listen, I'm diabetic and I'm low right now, and I'm drinking a Diet Coke, and that doesn't help anybody. So you haven't seen the X-Men shit?
No, not yet. So.
And F this movie
really
first,
should.
We're going to stop recording. Look at the X-Men thing, and then we're going to come back having just seen it.
Ah, okay.
But you won't know, listener. Although we could maybe just have like a 10-minute silence while we look at it. There's going to
be
an edit, and we're going to jump forward in time, and Mike will have seen the picture of X-Men First Class, and then we're going to talk about it, okay?
Got it.
Some Doctor Who shit, right? Pretend we're getting into a phone booth.
It's a police box, and it's called the TARDIS.
Right, sorry, police box. And then when we come back, I'm going to be played by someone more interesting. So, Mike, now you've seen the first images of the cast of X-Men First Class. What are your thoughts?
Eh.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Underwhelming.
It is underwhelming.
And again, it's not bad. It's just like I think we all expected something really sort of like new and cool because of what we've heard Matthew Vaughn is doing. He's doing it, period. And he's sort of put together a cool cast, except for January Jones so far. So I was really expecting to be excited, and it looked a lot like it could have come from, like, the Brett Ratner X-Men.
You know? Yeah, it's an underwhelming presentation as well. Like, forgot about it already.
All right.
Well, who's in it?
Yeah, exactly. But while we were looking for that, listeners who aren't privy to what happened while the microphone was off, we found another picture that was even more recent, literally just released, of Kevin Bacon and January Jones, some like Hellfire Club shots, and that was kind of neat, I thought.
Yeah, she looks good.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what you want from the White Queen. I don't...
Yeah, all right. Once again, my whole movie news segment has fallen flat.
Yeah, I blame myself.
Listen, that makes two of us. No, I'm just kidding. Do we need to talk about Andrew Garfield in Spider-Man gear?
Oh, I liked it. Okay. I thought, you know, it just have that one image, but I thought the costume looked cool. I thought he looked good in it. He was not too, you know, I like my Spider-Man to be skinny.
Right. With a giant head. Are you worried he's going to fall over at any time?
He does have a giant head.
He's like a Spider-Man Pez dispenser. That's kind of what he looked like. Just giant head, skinny body. I'm worried.
Maybe I take back what I said.
No, I thought it looked good.
Yeah, I thought it looked cool.
It looked like the cover of a comic book, you know, and that was neat. And I never had a problem with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man outfit, but I didn't realize until it was gone how much I kind of didn't actually like that white webbing that was all over the place.
Yeah,
and now it's gone, and I'm like, oh, cool. That actually looks better without it.
So. How about Captain America, those screenshots we saw?
I'm intrigued, you know. You know, it's sort of like the purist in me just wants them to go with the traditional Captain America outfit. But I like the idea that, like, they're going period, and they're going sort of more realistic. Like, no, here's a guy who put this stuff together instead of sewed a spandex Captain America costume.
Right.
So
no, I thought it looked cool.
I have my hopes up, you know. I have to say I'm still looking forward, although the pictures underwhelmed me. Of all of them, I'm most excited about, I think, X-Men First Class, but I think that's only because of Matthew Vaughn, and I'm coming off of Kick-Ass, which I really liked, and Stardust, which I liked. But
yeah, I would agree. I'm completely underwhelmed by Thor.
Yeah, that's the problem. And maybe it's, you know, as soon as I see a... That's the only one I've seen the trailer for.
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe that's the problem.
Right.
Because, in theory, Kenneth Branagh directing a Thor movie is interesting to me.
Right.
But the trailers did not promise anything that excited me.
No.
So, yeah, that's third after Captain America and X-Men First Class first.
Yep, I feel like we're missing one.
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, right.
Also seen a trailer, also very underwhelmed. So. Yes. Right now, the ones I'm most excited about are the ones I know the least about. I don't know. All right, so anyway, moving out of dork news. Mike, have you seen anything good lately that is not Doctor Who?
Nope. How about yourself?
Okay, I saw a movie about Doctor Who. Just kidding. There isn't one, everyone. Actually, there probably is.
I was going to say, actually, there is.
Not a theatrical movie, correct?
Correct. But there are talks about...
I saw Dr. Giggles. Is that the same?
It's close.
It has a doctor in it.
Right.
I think they went to med school together. I'm not positive. I'm not positive, everyone. Have you seen any movies lately?
I saw Spartacus.
Okay. Do you know I've never seen Spartacus?
I think I did know that.
Okay.
So
it's not news.
Right. Maybe I should have acted like I didn't know.
Okay, in Spartacus, tell me.
Yes.
At any point in the movie, do you see either blood or sand? Because those are two things I associate with Spartacus.
You actually see both.
Oh my goodness.
You do. Does
Lucy Lawless get naked anyway?
Yes.
Because God bless her. She's a terrific gal. She was on The Soup last week, and she's a sport.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
I do.
I ruined it for you,
though. Yeah, you did. Thanks a lot.
She's also a Cylon. Oh! Bam! Science! that wasn't a spoiler on that show, right? She was never anything else, right?
No, yeah, she was. She was a... Like,
fuck you guys. If you haven't watched it, she's a fucking Cylon.
She was a reporter. But you might find out the episode in which she's
quick,
introduced.
Right?
Yeah. The end of that episode.
Yeah.
So you killed that episode for people, but
whatever. Fuck you guys. I won't reveal the final Cylons because you're going to be so blown away. Just kidding. It's almost like, remember that guy you met? Cylon. Can you believe that shit?
Oh, sadly, you're right.
Oh, come on. Especially the black dude? Come on. he's nobody. And then all of a sudden he's like, really? He's a Cylon?
Jamal?
He's not one of the last Cylons. I'm talking about one of the, you find out about him earlier. I don't know if it's before or after Lucy Lawless. Oh, I won't stop ruining it. Anyway. So you saw Spartacus.
Yeah, yes, yes.
There's Cylons in Spartacus, right?
There are.
That's where they started?
It's good. Probably a little bit too long for me.
Okay.
I'm going to upset people because people love that movie.
Really?
I think so. I thought it was good. I thought the supporting cast was wonderful. They carried it. Like, Laurence Olivier. Not so much Tony Curtis. I'm a big Kirk Douglas fan, but he's... You know, Spartacus himself is probably the least interesting thing in the movie.
Oh, that happens a lot.
Right, I was going to say. But no, it's, you know...
It was years good. Before I knew that that was a Stanley Kubrick movie.
It doesn't feel like you wouldn't know.
Right.
That it's
Stanley sort of Kubrick. The least Stanley Kubrick.
Exactly.
Right.
It feels that way. No, I mean, no, I had fun watching it, but if I don't return to it for a while, that's fine.
Okay.
Couldn't wait to get back to Doctor Who.
Sure. Anything else besides Spartacus?
That's the most recent thing I've seen.
Wow.
I thought I was good with...
I mean, that's fine.
I've been watching Doctor Who and True Blood.
Okay. Spartacus. You saw Spartacus.
And then you know, Black Swan. A lot of movies you guys have covered recently. A lot of movies in the theater. Black Swan, King's Speech, things like that.
Yeah. Many of which can be found on your top 10 list, which is available on fthismovie.blogspot.com.
Yes. Exactly. How about you, Patrick?
I was surprised to see Marmaduke play so high. I really was.
I thought it was underrated.
Yeah, no.
I thought you guys were... It's no...
I haven't seen it, to be fair. I haven't seen it.
It's no Ramona and Beezus.
I like anything that Owen Wilson is involved in. So chances are, I'm going to like it.
I think you will.
But I have not seen it yet.
Have you seen anything?
I have. I've seen a lot of stuff lately because I have this job now that requires me to be sitting at a computer for 4 hours. And so... And given the layout of the new F This Movie studio, I'm too fucking lazy to go up and down stairs to pull a movie to watch. So I'm just like, oh, Netflix Instant, bam! But before I get to Netflix Instant, most of which I won't remember what I've seen, I saw The Green Hornet.
I was hoping you saw that. I want your review.
Well, unfortunately, my review is mostly painful indifference. Not terrible.
Okay.
But also not really worth recommending.
Okay.
It's not enough of any one thing. You know what I mean? Like it's too much of a studio movie to feel like a Michel Gondry movie, but then it's like too much of a Seth Rogen movie it's this movie that's pulling in all these different directions and it never really finds a single voice.
Okay.
And it's a bummer because, again, it's been around forever and all these different hands have touched it and it definitely feels like that. But you hear different things that might have been. I would have liked to have seen the Stephen Chow version, even though I'm not interested in, like, Kato implanting a microchip in the Green Hornet's head and controlling him like a video game, which is what Stephen Chow apparently wanted to do. I'm not really interested in that, but I would have liked to have seen him involved, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that Nicolas Cage parted ways. He was supposed to play the villain, but he wanted to do it with a Jamaican accent.
Yes.
Horrible idea, right? Definitely would have wanted to see that as opposed to... And Christoph Waltz isn't bad, but it's just the villain part is bad. They're trying to do something. Like, they sort of have an idea, but like most things in the movie, it's just sort of... halfway, it's like half of an idea not totally executed. So that was a bummer. Fine. I mean, it was fine. And like sort of Pineapple Express, by the time it gets to the last action sequence, you can definitely tell that they're just trying to destroy as much stuff as possible.
Okay.
Which I like, you know.
Sure.
But yeah.
Trailers were underwhelming to me.
Yeah.
I want to see it because of who's involved. Right. But
not something you need to run out and see. And again, you know, in the middle of January, you could do worse.
Okay.
Nothing else is really playing. So if you're caught up on all the sort of Oscar bait and shit, you could do worse. But yeah, if it came out in like the summer, I would say, oh yeah, don't bother.
Okay.
And then I also saw Blue Valentine.
Oh, how was that?
Well, very, very good.
Oh, good.
Very well done.
Oh, good.
I never want to see it again.
Just too much of a downer? Or?
Yeah, and again, you know, there's that whole Ebert quote about how no good movie is depressing. So I won't say, like, oh, no, it's too depressing. But yeah, tough to sit through.
Okay.
Uncomfortably, it's not even the subject matter. If you don't know what Blue Valentine is, it's Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams, both of whom are great, and neither of whom have done much for me in the past, even though I recognize, like, oh, they're both very talented, but I would never necessarily go see a movie because I'm like, well, Ryan Gosling's in it? Fuck, I gotta go see it. Right. And even more so for Michelle Williams. They're both very, very good. It's about just them and their sort of relationship falling apart. It's like this autopsy on a relationship that has gone south. And it's not just like, oh, the subject matter bums me out. I don't want to see two people being unhappy. But it's like, it's so, I'm going to sound like a douche saying this word, so I apologize. Intimate in every way. And if you see it, you'll know exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Even the way that the camera is like uncomfortably close for most of the movie, that it makes me feel uncomfortable. And again, that is what the movie wants to do, and right, it achieves its goals swimmingly. But it puts me in a place that I don't like to feel. Again, by design, but it's just not a movie I would necessarily revisit a lot.
Okay.
But very good and definitely worth seeing.
Is it a movie you would pick and choose who you would recommend it to? Does that make sense? Or,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would tell. But, I mean, I feel like anybody listening to a movie podcast would probably want to see it.
Okay.
I would think. Unless, listen, if you're someone who came across this looking for, like, Star Wars podcasts, Blue Valentine, not necessarily in the same arena as, like, if you're just looking for Star Wars shit, yeah, Blue Valentine, not gonna do a lot for you, maybe. But, you know, like, somebody who's listening to a movie podcast, yeah, definitely. But I'm not gonna tell, like, my dad.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because he just saw Avatar for the first time and he loved it. And I said, well, you probably should have seen it in a theater, because that's, you're watching it on a TV and you're saying, it's great, the dialogue is, I have no problem with. Like, well, you know.
Should you be judging him on
listen,
his love of Avatar?
I understand the things that are wrong with Avatar.
Yes.
Yeah, Mike is perhaps referencing the fact that I recently realized that Avatar didn't win Best Picture, and I'm all like, how come? I'm like Flowers for Algernon, fucking Cliff Robertson, Charlie, where I just keep getting dumber when it comes to Avatar. It's just, I started sort of at his high point where I'm just like, no, this movie is terrible, and here's why. And then as time passes, I regress, and I'm becoming more and more the mentally handicapped Cliff Robertson.
And it ends with you buying an Avatar ornament for your tree.
It does. So it doesn't end there.
No.
Because the story is still unfolding, because I'm like, Avatar didn't win Best Picture? I have no idea where this is going to go. Stay tuned, though, everyone, because as the story unfolds, it gets worse.
I'm riveted.
Yeah, every time he gets a call, it's just like, what's it going to be now? You fucking, you're changing your name to some sort of Navi bullshit. Anyway, let's talk about episode one, okay? As long as we're talking about being a fucking apologist about stuff and, like, being really a fan of something that maybe you shouldn't be a fan of, why don't you talk about where you were at? Oh, okay. Before we get into where you were at in 1999 when The Phantom Menace came out.
Okay.
Let's talk about the fact that, listen, we know we're in a fucking minefield here because few movies have been talked about to death more than the Star Wars prequels.
Correct.
So we are not in uncharted territory here, and the challenge, of course, for us is to find something new to say about the Star Wars prequels, specifically The Phantom Menace. To the extent that there's a guy who runs a site called Red Letter Media, who puts out a series of very, very popular YouTube videos where, I mean, they're just like 2-hour takedowns of the Star Wars prequels. And he does a great job. Yeah, and they run, you know, I myself have a hard time getting through them because he starts with these big ideas, and I love that, and he makes some really great points. But by the end, it's just this minutia where I'm just like, well, if you put any movie under that kind of a microscope, of course you could tear it to shit, you know. So if you really want to hear specific reasons why The Phantom Menace maybe isn't that great, definitely check out Red Letter Media. And our challenge, of course, is to not repeat the things that he says. But it's been a long time since I've seen it, so if I do, I apologize. It's not on purpose. And the reason we sort of came to The Phantom Menace to talk about UnF this movie tonight, almost a half hour into the podcast, is because they recently announced that Lucas is going to be issuing all of the Star Wars films on Blu-ray for the first time in HD. And of course, the fanboy community is up in arms because he's releasing the special editions of the original series on Blu-ray, and who even wants the fucking prequels? Meanwhile, lots of people will buy them.
You and I included.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so people are up in arms about the way that it's being released, much like almost anything Star Wars related now. I mean, the guy really can't win.
No.
But I watched the trailer for the Blu-ray release, and all it is, you know, images from the Star Wars movies cut together to the fucking John Williams music, and it was enough to get me excited about even the prequels, because when you cut them in with all the good stuff, you're like, I don't know, I mean, with the music and everything, right. It's like, I will totally watch, I will own and watch those, you know. Once, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you learn your lesson. But, so I got excited, and it got me thinking about the prequels again, and obviously, again, they've just been talked to death, but let's get into it here.
All right.
It's 1999. You are...
A confused boy.
A confused boy who has yet to touch a woman. No, I'm only kidding.
Barely.
So just talk through a little bit of like your excitement, the hype surrounding it, and then your reaction maybe to seeing it.
All right. The Phantom Menace, I will admit, holds a very special place in my heart. Because at that time I worked at a comic book store. All my friends who didn't even work at the comic book store hung out at that comic book store. We were there constantly. So I was fully in geek culture, just surrounded by geekdom. We're all Star Wars fans and could not have been more excited for a Star Wars movie than I don't think I've ever been more excited before or since for a trailer.
Okay.
When the trailer first premiered, I remember coming home from school, getting a call from my friend Adam saying, hey, we're going to a movie theater in Barrington, because before
it was Waterboy. Like Waterboy and Meet Joe Black were right. The two, yeah.
They will show the trailer for episode one before, and if you stick through the credits after.
That's interesting. Right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, after the movie. So we all...
but like they weren't giving refunds, that was the deal, right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, no refunds. So we went, we chose Waterboy.
Over Meet Joe Black? Wow.
Yeah. I'm pretty confident the entire theater was there for the trailer.
Yeah.
The trailer...
So they didn't love the Waterboy? Perhaps a little hostile towards the Waterboy?
A little bit.
Imagine what they would have been like towards Meet Joe Black.
About 10
seconds. Which I like, by the way.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
I do.
About 10.
I don't fucking feel bad about it.
Actually, I've never seen it, so I don't.
Well, chances are you're not going to like it, but I do. That fucking movie works for me. And it's one of those things. Again, we're talking about Star Wars, but here's the thing. Meet Joe Black, I go to see by myself in the theater in 1998.
Okay.
Literally by myself. Nobody else is in the theater, I don't think. And for whatever reason, that fucking movie worked on me. I was crying. I didn't care that it was 3 hours. It could have been six. I'm just like, I love Meet Joe Black. And then... You know, distance passes, and you're like, well, obviously it was the place I was in at the time, because that movie's not very good. Nobody likes that movie. So I'll watch it again every time that movie works on me, whether it's a matter of putting me back in that original place, or I just really like that movie. It was not just a function of, like, the mood I was in. I still like Meet Joe Black. Star Wars, go!
So I can't wait for them to meet Joe Black after this movie.
Oh, it's never going to happen. Never. What would be the point? I'll just be like, I like it. What? I like it.
So about 10 seconds into the trailer, the film cuts. And I thought there was going to be a riot. People were freaking out. Screaming. It was actually hilarious. You know, it was some schmuck up there who did it on purpose just to see nerds go wild.
Oh, you think so?
I don't know. It was so perfect
though. Yeah, right.
So everyone went crazy, but they started over, and it was the most. I mean, my God, we dissected that trailer wouldn't believe. I mean, the shot of Darth Maul. We referred to him as the red face guy. We didn't know their names yet.
Right.
When the second end of his lightsaber comes out, just blew our minds. We were so.
Do you think a lot of the audience grew second boners? I know. Out of their boner, another boner came out.
So I don't think I've ever been more excited for a trailer, dissected a trailer
okay,
more.
Okay, Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift? No?
That's up there.
Okay.
So we were completely caught up. Got tickets for the midnight show. When the toys went on sale before the movie ever came out, went on sale at Toys R Us at midnight. They closed at 6 p.m. that day. So at 6 p.m., we were the first in line. We got chairs.
Wow.
And we hung out for those 6 hours.
Was there a huge line behind you by the end of it?
Yes.
No kidding.
Gigantic. And for hours, we were the only schmucks still in line, which was hilarious. But we were prepared. We had food, drinks.
Yeah.
The line was huge. So when the doors opened, it was complete mayhem. We had a system worked out though, where a couple of us we made camp in the store, and we knew what figures were available.
Okay.
And
what were the figures?
It was like Darth Maul, Qui-Gon, Anakin. So two of the guys would keep track of what figures we had, and then myself, my friend Adam, we were runners, so we'd run up with figures, and they'd be like, we need two more Mauls, go.
And now this was this just for your personal collection, or were you guys also buying stuff for the comic book store?
Both.
Okay.
There's plenty for way too much for a personal collection though.
You're grabbing handfuls of stuff?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
One of these. I need an Amidala because someone needs to run this. Someone needs to be in charge.
But it was such mayhem.
Someone needs to lose a British accent.
I felt like we needed to scoop them all up.
Yeah.
So that was just an amazing night. I have nothing but fond memories of that. And then we all went to the midnight show, and that, even though I probably deep down knew what I was watching was not very good.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I was still on a high, still excited that this was stuff in the Star Wars universe that we had never seen before. Characters we hadn't seen before. Darth Maul looked awesome.
Yeah.
Lightsaber battle was, unlike anything we had seen previously.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was, we went to the midnight show, and then, later that morning we went and saw it again.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I really wanted to do because I felt like I could relax. I felt like I wasn't relaxed.
Right. Oh, for sure.
First time around. So it was just an amazingly fun time for myself.
I remember there was a theater in Chicago. They weren't all doing this, but I know maybe Water Tower or somewhere was doing round the clock 24-hour showings of it.
That's awesome. I was smart enough to go home and sleep after the midnight show, before I saw it again. But
and so after the first one, you're still just holy shit. It was Star Wars and blah blah blah, and you almost don't care.
Yep.
You see it the second time. Are you still
not as
digging on it?
No.
Are you starting to poke holes in it?
I think I started to poke holes.
Okay.
But still enjoying it though.
Okay.
I was a. It's funny now looking back on it because I'm not this way anymore, but I was a Jar Jar defender.
Really?
Yeah, I was. But I think I was just blindly defending Star Wars because I watch it now. I was, put it on last night in preparation for this podcast. And I was like, oh my God, I really have such a hard, I hate, I don't know why I feel like I don't want to come down on Jar Jar, maybe because everyone does, but oh my God, he is rough.
He's horrible, but again, you can't put the movie's failure on his
and I don't
shitty Gungan shoulders.
Right.
Like, the movie has obviously larger problems.
It does.
So, okay, it's interesting. And we talked ahead of time when we said, like, hey, let's do one on The Phantom Menace, again, in sort of an honor of the resurgence of Star Wars coming out on Blu-ray, which doesn't happen until, like, September. We're just way ahead of the fucking game.
And I'd say in honor of Natalie Portman at a career peak.
Yeah, really. And here she is sleepwalking through a series of movies.
Yeah, well, we can get into that later. But yeah, I have thoughts on that as well.
Okay. Two Best Actress nominees prominently in Star Wars Attack of the Clones, by the way. Who's the second? Who is it?
In Attack of the Clones.
Not Attack of the Clones. We're talking about Phantom Menace, which is the movie that there are two Best Actress nominees. Not this year. A previous Best Actress nominee.
Has Keira Knightley been nominated
previously? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, so that's your...
And I didn't realize how much of the movie she's in. She's actually in a lot. She doesn't have her own voice, but like she's in there a lot. So, but we were talking about it, and we were like both of us agreeing that Phantom Menace, for whatever reason, neither of us totally hate, and of the prequels, it's probably the one that we're like the most okay with, even though conventional wisdom is sort of that Revenge of the Sith is the best, and it probably is, but I am unable to go back and watch Revenge of the Sith. I don't know why, but I can totally go back and watch Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
But we're sort of coming from two different places, because while I am, by blood, a dork, and I do like Star Wars, I really like Star Wars, I'm nowhere near the place that you are at in terms of Star Wars, how sort of closely you hold it to your heart and how many times you've seen it and how much you like Star Wars and how much you live in that world and how much you lived in that world in 1999. Because I was very removed from, I feel like, everything Star Wars in 1999.
Okay.
To the point where, I mean, I was definitely excited to see it, and I went... I had a friend who worked at the theater, so we were going to see, he got us in to see, I think we were going to see, like, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. I don't know why, because we got in free, you know? But before we went to that, we went to, like, I think Meet Joe Black and just stayed through the trailers and saw the trailer, and I was definitely excited about it. And then I started to see it a lot, and the excitement kind of wore off, you know? And I, unlike you, was trying to stay away from the frenzy.
We were trying to stay away from spoilers.
No. That I mean the frenzy, the midnight bullshit.
Okay.
Like, I was staying at my mom's house for like a week because she had gone on a vacation with my two sisters, and I was staying with her dog. I remember the week Phantom Menace came out, and I didn't go. It opened on like a Wednesday.
Yes.
And I didn't go. I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to get within a mile of that theater for a few days, so I didn't even try. So I waited until Friday, and then Friday during the day, I was like, well, fuck it, I'll try. And I went with someone to see it, to like a matinee, and we had no problem. And I was like, okay, I don't know. Again, like you, it's hard to tell how I feel about this, because I'm definitely excited when that crawl starts and the music.
Oh my
God. It's like, I'm seeing the first new Star Wars movie in 16 years.
Right. Just a 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
When that came up, the audience applauded.
When it changes to the Lucasfilm. Yes. I mean, even in the trailer, like, that gives you such a thrill.
Exactly.
That you don't notice. It's like you aren't aware of the text that's actually passing in front of you.
Text about taxes.
Because if you were, you would get up and leave. You would say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong... Oh, this is a joke. I'm in the wrong movie. I'm having a nightmare? I don't know what's happening.
Right.
So, and then like you, I ended up seeing it a second time the same day, but not by choice. I went that night to see a different movie with Doug, actually, who often is on this podcast as well.
Yes.
Because again, we thought on Friday night it was going to be fucking crazy. So we were like, well, let's go see something else. And then next week you'll see Phantom Menace. And we get there and no one's there. And he's like, well, do you mind? Can we go see Phantom Menace? I'm like, ah, fuck it. Even though I saw it 6 hours ago, I'll go again. And, again, I don't remember how I felt about it, but definitely that summer of 99, a lot of great movies came out in 1999. Great year for movies, but it is still sort of defined by The Phantom Menace. I mean, I remember I was like collecting game pieces from Taco Bell. I spent a lot of time at Taco Bell in 99. I don't know why, but I was collecting these game pieces. So like you, a lot of like sort of fond memories just around The Phantom Menace, even though I don't have a lot of fond memories of The Phantom Menace. But I still think, and I'm probably wrong, because like I said, I haven't been able to bring myself to sit through Revenge of the Sith again since I saw it when it came out. When it came out, I was like, well, that one is the best of the bunch, and that's the one that sort of redeems it all, and to the point where I'm like, I don't know, prequels, they might work. They don't. But I still feel like The Phantom Menace has things in it that work, whereas the others don't.
Correct. I mean, well, we can both agree that Attack of the Clones is the worst.
Attack of the Clones, there's nothing redeeming about Attack of the Clones.
I don't think there is.
Not one thing. And people might disagree with me. There's not one redeeming thing about Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones, even, and I saw Phantom Menace many, many times in the theater. And like I said, the first time I saw it, I was just on a high.
Yeah.
And while I was able to poke holes in it, after multiple viewings, I still enjoyed it every time I saw it. It wasn't until I went to the midnight show of Attack of the Clones, still sort of caught up. And I remember sitting in the theater thinking, oh no,
yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Like yeah. This is not, like, I can't even fake this. I don't care that it's,
right.
It's like just the fact you knew, that it's Star Wars.
You knew
Wars
right away. Phantom Menace you didn't, and Revenge of the Sith you didn't.
No.
You got caught up in both movies. Attack of the Clones, no. You knew right away.
You did.
That, fuck this.
Yep.
And the problem, I think, and I do want to spend most of the time talking about Phantom Menace.
No, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. But it's hard not to get into sort of this conversation about the prequels in general, you know what I mean? Because why address one when they sort of all work as a piece? And I don't mean that in the way that Lucas wants. I mean, like, they're all bad in sort of the same way.
Right.
The problem with Attack of the Clones was, even seeing Phantom Menace, and you knew that there were problems and it didn't work, but you like you made apologies for it because you're like, well, no. It has to lay a lot of the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that comes next is going to fix the problems. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You just thought, like, okay, but now it's going to be great.
Right.
And then Attack of the Clones starts, and it's like, oh, this is horrible. This is a step backwards. And now there's all this fucking pressure on Revenge of the Sith because you're like, well, of the prequel trilogy, he's already wasted two of the three movies, so now it's all got to happen in the third movie.
Right.
And to some extent, that's what he tried to do, but it was too late, obviously, because he had fucked it up for two movies.
Yep.
Thinking back about Phantom Menace, I've always thought, that it's not horrible. And then rewatching it for this podcast, it's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
It's worse than I remember. However, there are still things that work. Liam Neeson is not given a character to play, nor is he given any good dialogue, but he brings something. He gives a performance. He has a sort of a, as Kiefer Sutherland would say, a gravitas. It's his favorite word, everyone. Look it up.
Gravitas.
I won't say what his least favorite word is. but he has something that no other actor in any of the subsequent prequels would have.
Completely agree.
I mean, the guy, Ian McDermid, I might be saying that wrong, I feel bad.
The Emperor?
Yeah. Palpatine. He's good, he definitely, like, has fun and chews some scenery, and as you get later on in the prequels, it's like, he's the only thing to fucking carry you through. Because you're like, no, okay, he's doing something. Because even Ewan McGregor, who I generally like, there's nothing going on. And it's not his fault, but, like, he's just not given anything to play.
No,
as much as I know that you love him, say, you are the chosen one! right? Isn't that the one that you like?
A little bit. Wait, I do like Ewan McGregor, but I don't know if it's because Alec Guinness did all the...
You like him in the prequels, even? Even in, like, Phantom Menace?
I do, but I think it's...
Are you distracted by his wig?
Oh, horribly distracted.
What's
by
going
his
on?
Wig. I don't
those
know.
Reshoots? Because it's only in those specific shots where you're like, what the fuck is that?
They have to be. The one
he's
always,
wearing a carpet on his head?
Yeah, the one that always sticks out for me is right before they go into to see the Gungans when they first meet Jar Jar. It's painfully obvious.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's just I have affection for the character Obi-Wan.
Sure.
And I like Ewan McGregor, but I don't know, but watching it this last time, he's not great in it. But I still really respond to him, and I was just questioning whether I'm responding to, like I said, my sort of love of that character already, or is he actually doing something with that character? I don't know that he is.
In the beginning, he's trying to sort of imitate, I think, Alec Guinness's cadence. Like, he's doing almost like an impression.
He does, which is in, which is another thing that I will admit in that first trailer.
I was going to say, in the trailer, everyone gets excited about that,
right? I completely
he sounds just like him.
Yeah.
This is going to be awesome.
Yeah. I went crazy, yes.
Again, now. I don't know if we're going to end up splitting this into two podcasts, because I almost feel like there's my head's going to explode right now, because there's so much to say, and again, like I said, it's been talked to death, so maybe we're not saying anything new, so I apologize if we're not. Because I feel like there's a fundamental problem. And it goes back to, we talked about this on a previous podcast, this fanboy culture that is wants to see the beginnings of things.
Mm-hmm.
Prequels, I think, by nature, don't work. You think you want to see these things, but you're almost always disappointed. I can think of very few...
Batman Begins.
Right. And even that, A... we've seen a bunch of times. It wasn't giving us something new. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't really giving us anything,
I guess,
new, because we sort of already know a lot of that story. But also, it's very flawed, you know?
Well, yeah, no.
Redeemed by The Dark Knight. Right. But the one that jumps in my head, and again, it's not, we've had this conversation lots of times, it's not my favorite movie in the series, The Godfather Part II.
Yes.
Is one of the few examples of where it's like you go back to something and show, here's how this started, and it works. But the reason that The Godfather 2 works is because of the present day story that's going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
All the shit with Michael in Cuba or Florida or whatever.
Yeah.
And the Hyman Roth and all that. And the one is constantly informing the other.
Right.
And so I started to think, like, so would Star Wars prequels have been better if he was telling another story? Like, okay, let's say The Phantom Menace becomes a story about Luke and what happens to him next, but at the same time we're getting flashbacks to the early days of Anakin and Obi-Wan. And is that a better movie? It's hard to say because that's not the movie that was made or whatever.
It is hard to say, yeah.
But in my head, that's the way to go.
Yeah, you might be onto something.
Because... The prequels, they're a bad idea. They're a bad idea because we know what's coming, so there's no drama. I mean, there's drama built in to the fall of this guy, you know?
Right.
But because we know exactly where... There's no tension, maybe? How's that?
Yeah.
Because we know what everything is leading to.
That's true.
And unfortunately, what it's leading to, where Star Wars kicks off, you know, it's like... we have to see how an empire comes into power. And that's not terribly interesting. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe somebody could have made that interesting.
No, you're probably right. But I think because I just love that universe, that was interesting to me. I was interested to know how the empire went from...
You were? Or you thought you were? Because I thought I was too. Oh, that could be cool. Let's see what happens.
Well, I'm having seen it, I'm not terribly.
And that's what I'm saying. You think you want to see these things, but you probably don't.
But is it just because of is it Lucas's fault? Is it just the way? Right. I mean, maybe
And that's where I come down on, like, maybe it's just the version that we saw.
Right.
But then I go back to, but it never works. If I could point to all these examples of, like,
yeah,
no, it could work because this did it and this did it and this did it, but because I can't, I lean more towards you think you want to see this,
right,
but you don't, because every time you do, it's a crushing disappointment.
Right.
I don't know. Because, yeah, particularly The Phantom Menace, but all of the prequels are very much caught up in sort of political machinations.
Yes.
And, like... that's a lot of The Phantom Menace. All this sort of backroom political maneuvering so we could see what? how exactly Senator Palpatine becomes Emperor. So we can, I mean...
No, you're right.
Very little actually happens in The Phantom Menace that sets up what's to come. And that was the big problem with The Phantom Menace, but it turns out very little happens in any of the prequels
right.
to warrant telling this story. But The Phantom Menace in particular, because Lucas made the decision to start when Anakin Skywalker is a kid. And you're not going to see, again, when we heard he's doing prequels, we're like, oh, we're going to see how Anakin Skywalker goes from fucking Anakin Skywalker that Obi-Wan talks about. He was my fucking friend. He was a great Jedi. We were friends. He was my best student. We were going to see all that. And how does he become Darth Vader? And that fucking poster comes out of a little kid in the shadow
poster, right.
is Darth Vader. Well, guess what? That poster has more exposition in it than anything in the fucking Phantom Menace.
Right.
Because nothing happens, particularly because he decided to start when he was a kid, and nothing happens in the Phantom Menace that tells us how he becomes Darth Vader.
No.
Which was going to be the story of the prequels, right? And again, I'm jumping all over the place
because
my mind is racing with, and maybe this has all been said before, and I have to keep giving that disclaimer because I apologize if you're listening to this and you're like, the fucking guy on Red Letter Media said all this. Well, I'll be honest. I don't remember anything the guy on Red Letter Media said except for one great point that I always point to with the fundamental flaw of The Phantom Menace, which is he does this great thing in the beginning about describe the characters, but you can't say what they look like or what their job is. And no one can do it.
Right.
Except they say Qui-Gon is stoic. Well, maybe. But is he? I don't know. and that to me, it's done.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely.
Done. You're done. Like, the movie's not going to work because of that problem. So right. I will always be thankful to the Red Letter Media guy for that. But I don't remember anything else that he said.
Because you could do that with Han Solo.
Yes. Or oh, he does Slayer. It. He does it on the thing.
Okay, right.
They describe the Star Wars characters and people go on and on and on. And then they say, now do Queen Amidala. Because you can't say she's a queen.
Right.
And you're done. Because she's not anything else.
No. So Anakin is a boy.
So it doesn't work. Yeah, I don't even know where I'm at.
Asking why would Lucas start with him as a kid?
Well, his answer is because I'm making this movie for kids. I mean, what he always sort of falls back on, that he was making this movie for kids. But what I was going to say is, I don't know what I was going to say.
I always thought he started him out as a kid because that's a it seems to me it's a much more heartbreaking story when you see him with his mother, you know, his mother raising him despite all these horrible things in their lives, and she loves him and he loves her and they only have each other, and you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, there's
so when you're watching that and knowing what he becomes, it's, you know.
Right. And I guess there's potential for that there.
I mean, maybe I'm just making excuses, but
no, I mean, I
would assume
somebody else could have probably done it and started with him as a kid still, and it still could have worked, you know?
Okay. I go back to that poster. That poster to me is great. And it's great because he's a little kid.
Right. But nothing happens.
No,
you know what I mean?
I hear you.
We learn a few things. Okay, so Senator Palpatine gets a promotion, and he's put into power. Okay, great. And Anakin Skywalker is going to be trained to be a Jedi. And those are basically the two things that happen that matter in the overall story of Star Wars. Yep. That's it. The rest is all just kind of filler.
You say midichlorians are just filler?
Well, right. So we can get to that, but again, it's well-covered territory. But it smacks of a guy who doesn't understand his own thing.
No.
And there's all these people who whine, and George Lucas raped my childhood, and those people are fucking stupid. As soon as you say that, I'm sorry, you lose at life. Because what? Grow up.
Okay, you know? I was going to bring that up to you, because I don't feel that way
right.
at all.
You still have those movies.
Yeah, it does not affect my love for
And for guess what? Movies. Right, it does, and nor should it. And, you know, if your childhood is really ruined because he made a movie you didn't like, well, guess what? Your childhood was probably already ruined because you've wasted your life.
Right.
And ultimately, guess what? It's George Lucas's thing to do whatever the fuck he wants to do with it.
Completely agree.
what it should do is indicate to you, maybe he doesn't really know what he's doing. And again, I'm not going to get into bash George Lucas. I like Star Wars. Maybe he's not the fucking genius that you think he was. Or maybe he's lost it.
Yeah, I was going to say, or he just no longer has whatever.
I would argue to some extent he never had it. Never had it, but he never had it to the degree that he was built up to have had it.
I'll give you that.
I think that's more so what it is.
I'll give you that.
I think it's somewhere in between those two things, you know? That he lost a lot of it, but he also wasn't quite the guy that people built him up to be.
Right.
Because you get the impression that he doesn't understand what it is that made Star Wars so special. And something like midichlorians is a great example of that. No longer is it this neat, mystic idea of the Force, of good and evil. It's midichlorians and tax debates and blocked trade routes. And it's a guy who's been sheltered for 20 years, who has lost touch with what made these things special, and who has lived in this world so much for 20 years, because guess what? We fucking forced him to, because that's all we want from him. No, do Star Wars. No, shut the fuck up. Do Star Wars. Okay. But now we've locked him in a Star Wars cage for 20 years, and he's like this autistic who has lived in this world for 20 years, and he comes out and he's like, guess what? I know the whole story about how different planets maneuvered and how people came into power, and I know what the Force is now, guys. It's midichlorians. And you can do a blood test and say, who's going to be a Jedi?
Right. Not to stand midichlorians, but that's...
That is the scene where Hope dies.
Yeah, right.
That's the scene that kills Hope. If Star Wars is a new Hope, that's... It has to be, because all Hope dies in the prequels.
That's true.
Yeah, that more than anything you can point to. And you can say fucking Jar Jar, but listen, Jar Jar is nothing but an epic miscalculation.
Right. And my buddy Adam, who I talked about earlier, was a lifeguard that summer, and he said every little kid that came to the pool had Jar Jar stuff.
Right.
So in some ways...
And that's what he was going for.
Right.
He wanted this movie to be for kids, and that's why he has a little kid in the lead and why he's running around going, yippee, and yay! There's a lot of that in the movie, by the way. It's not just the one yippee. Like, more than one character is doing the equivalent of yippee. But the problem with Jar Jar is that he's supposed to be funny, and he isn't.
Right, exactly.
You know? Even to kids, is he funny? I don't know. And there's fart jokes, and there's all this stuff. And you're like, what are you doing? This is beneath you. But he wants to make a kids movie, right? Okay. But that doesn't jive with what the movie's about. Because no kid knows what the movie's about. I'm 33 years old. I watched this movie two nights ago. What?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on? Because if I know, I don't care. And I can't bring myself to care, because maybe I have the mental capacity to understand, but I can't stop myself from checking out.
Right.
I could go back and rewatch a scene three times to force myself to understand, okay, what just happened? But I don't want to. I don't care.
No.
And I can't care. And again, I really think it's the result of George Lucas being locked in a Star Wars cage for 20 years. And this is what he comes out thinking that this is what we need to see.